back to another edition of This Week in Innovation. I'm your host, one of your co-hosts, Jeff Roster, and I'm here with Brian, who is a world traveler. Brian, where have you been the last two or three, I know, 4 weeks, I think, right?
I've been all around, Jeff. So I think in the early part of September, the late part of September, I was in Sri Lanka. I had a chance to speak in the United Nations Science Policy Council about the effects of AI. So did that for about 3 days. And then I ended up going to Singapore and then meeting one of our customers in Singapore. And then basically presenting with their executive at the Cloud Conference. So Cloud Conference is attended by 23,000 both tech and business executives in Asia-Pac, and it's held in Singapore. So we presented our Interplay AI solutions and also our partnership with one of our customers, Fuji. And then spent some time there, and then I get to go to Hong Kong the following week, spent a couple of days there, and then finally came back to California. So it was a pretty long trip. I think I was out from the 26th to I think the 19th or the 21st or something like that, or the following month. Yeah.
So let's go back and touch on the United Nations. So obviously AI has been the front and center. The White House has made some statements on their council. You're at the UN. So what can you share with us? Was it a public session? Was it under background? What can you talk about?
It is a public session, and you will actually see some of the reports from that session on the internet, right? Because what we spoke about there in that session went as a kind of all that content got rolled into and went into the Environmental Council of the main UN. Then eventually that'll help you make policy decisions and so on, right? So that given meeting was between the private sector in Asia-Pac and then the government sector, the public sector, essentially, right? Because what happens is, the world is heating, by a couple of degrees, right? The 1 degree heating is going to happen, right? The problem with that here, the global warming and all the effects of all these things is that, the deterioration is happening at a much, much faster pace, right? From, ice cap melting and all kinds of things. But what happens though is in the Asia-Pac region, I think the top five or the top eight of the world's most polluted cities are in these different countries in Asia-Pac. So they were thinking about how do we actually, accelerate the environmental agenda, and how, both the private sector and the public sector, can help. And, all the way from the public policy to fund sustainability projects and environmental projects to how can the private sector get involved in it, both from a funding perspective, as well as from a technology, as well as from a, expertise offering perspective, right? So my role was essentially to talk about like how artificial intelligence can help in this journey. What happened was before that, I had a couple of companies that's locally based in these regions. I had a chat with a couple of those companies in terms of how well AI is helping in optimization of solar power production, cold storage and efficiency usage in cold storage, right? In efficiency gains in agriculture, because when in these countries, when people plant these paddy fields, there is water on top of the paddy field for at least 6 inches thick, right? But all that water is wasted because the plants don't need that much water, but that's the process they've learned through, right? But by using AI and IoT sensors, you can very precisely understand how much water to put, so you end up saving a lot of natural resources, right? As humans, we end up using a lot of resources, in an unnecessary way, right? And it was really well received. And in fact, some of the policy requirements or like some of those three takeaways I put in my speech, in fact, was, I think, a part of some of the suggestions they made, because I saw that in one of their documents, right? So which is great. That means, people are listening to this message. And I think, we want to, I think technology can change, and it's a very hopeful message, right? But one of the things, though, that made me realize while I started doing the research on how AI can help with sustainability and started to talk to startup companies in this region and try to gather actual KPIs and numbers, it became very evident in my mind, right? AI is unlike any technology trends that we've seen, you know, in the past, blockchain, like augmented reality, you know, you name it, whatever, right? Whatever technology trends that we've seen in the past, AI, of course, is something that's like, it's very, what I would call like almost like very an omnipresent technology, right? What does that mean? It means that we have this technology that can be applied for every use case, right? Let's take blockchain. You can apply it in some banking cases, fantastic. Well, you can apply in like, you know, pricing resources. I mean, it's good, but it also has its limitation, right? The thing with AI is you can apply it across every industry, all the way from environment to sustainability to medical science, health science, insurance. It's everywhere, right? And it's fairly easy to apply it. And then you are seeing like amazing amounts of benefits very, very quickly, because this type of, you know, intelligence is like really, really optimizing and looking at patterns that humans can't, you know, track on a day-to-day basis, right? Which is amazing, right? So that's, and then it's also, you know, going across any given organization. Like, let's say, you know, you have a company in the retail sector. Now the retail company can use it all the way from their consumer, talking to their consumers and optimizing those conversations through AI, to all the way to, you know, in supply chain and, you know, look, optimizing, you know, payroll or like doing HR processes, hiring resources. So it's all across everywhere. So this AI is so really pervasive. It's going to be very pervasive, and it's going to spread like wildfire. And, you know, you wake up in December 2024 and suddenly realize, you know, every analyst prediction has to be upped again. And things are going to actually be, you know, the numbers may or may not meet, you know, it may be $1 trillion things that they're talking about. But you are going to wake up and see, you know, my God, AI is everywhere. Right? Because companies already, I saw a report today in LinkedIn that's saying that a lot of organizations have actively started both AI as well as generative AI projects, right? So it's top of mind for every board. It's top of mind for every C-level leader, right? And actually, especially in tech companies, let's say like, you know, what penetration does generative AI specifically have in tech companies? I think it's about like probably north of 35-40% penetration, right? I'll give you a classic example. Iterate, on average, across all of our customers and everything, and also our new product builds, as well as Interplay, I mean, our flagship high revenue generating product, we have typically on a given day, we have about 35-40 projects. This includes the build projects we are doing for customers, our existing Interplay apps versus solutions like Interplay itself, like the features inside Interplay, right? So if you look at that entire 35-40 projects, today, 16 of them are purely generative AI. That means it's like 45% for a company like Iterate, right? And it's true for every tech company. It's true for every larger high-tech company too. So you're looking at 25 to 40% of a company's effort today, if you are in the tech business or in the business of selling tech, has turned within like last September till now into generative AI, right? But for retail or a traditional company, it's probably low if you're a bank, right? I think today it's probably like at the executive attention level, it's probably 30% attention or 40% attention. But from an actual project perspective, today it's still under less than 5% based on some of the analysis that I've done, right? But that number is going to like rapidly change in 24. Because now we are in the financial cycle, financial planning for FY24, right? Because most companies, we are like where their financial year starts in, right? Next year or next January or next April, they're all thinking about their what their future budgeting looks like. And every leader that I've spoken to has generative AI in their budget, both our customers as well as.
So Brian, what does that mean? It's AI in their budget. Is that separate line item? Is that something that the analyst or community is going to be forecasting? What does that look like?
It's both, I think. What happens is generative AI is going to be generative AI specific projects are going to be a separate line items. But then generative AI is also in marketing. So if you are a CMO, in your budget, you budgeted like, okay, now we are doing targeting, or we are doing like messaging on our website, or we are responding to social media comments, but we are just doing using whatever tool point solution we've got today. But how do we actually train generative AI to do that? So they put that as a part of an existing funded project. There is a generative AI sub item inside an existing funded project. So that's for some of the players. In fact, that's true for most of the traditional companies, because they already have existing projects they are planning for FY24, right? And they are putting generative AI as a sub item in there. But then companies that are also looking at building their own IP, right? Because the beautiful thing about this space, Jeff, right, is that, you know, like, if you look at all the big tech, right, the big five, the big six, how many bigs you want to add to, right? They all have a Google, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, right? All these guys, they all have a search engine. They all have a video website. They all kind of have a phone or like a bunch of very, very popular super apps in the phone, right? They all have all these end consumer interfaces. So they all want to know, you know, what the 300 million people in America are doing every day, right? They want to be a big part of your attention economy, right? So from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, these big companies want to be a part of that, right? But they are not always a part of your entire life in everything you do, right? I believe, at least my estimation, there is up to about a 20% of your life that big companies are not a part of it, right? That 20% is the time, you know, where you are at church, or you are at you're getting a haircut, right? Or if you're a lady, you're in the beauty salon, right? Right. Or the time, you know, like, you know, you are at some local restaurant, right? So there is this time where like traditional businesses do have your information, like banks, right? Like, you know, I'm doing tax, so I'm like logging into my bank and sending stuff to my accountant, right? So all these times where, you know, these big companies are not a part of your life. And that part of that 20% of your life, right, at least 80% of that, so 20%, is basically owned by traditional companies, like beauty companies, like banks, right, like places where you go pump gas stations, places where you go buy, you know, grocery, supermarket, retailers. So this information is only owned and accessed by these traditional companies. With generative AI, this is an opportunity for these companies, right, to actually take their proprietary data and train these generative AI large language models to give advantage for their business. This is the time where they should not, you know, upload this to ChatGPT or give it away to these big fives, big tens. They should take advantage. They should build IP moats around their business, right?
So let me make sure I'm understanding that. So you're talking basically about building, what did we used to call that software in the old days? On-prem? I mean, you're not really, you're talking about model that's built that is...
Yeah, yeah. That is trained on your proprietary data, right? Or you're using an AI model to answer information, like analyze your proprietary data, right? But that does not have to be on-premise. It can actually be in cloud, but it'll be on your secure cloud. Or if you are running on AWS or Google, it'll be in your private segment. But you're not actually pumping all that into a networked large language model like a ChatGPT, right? Or an OpenAI, right? So this is an opportunity for larger companies, especially traditional businesses, right? When I say traditional businesses, I mean companies whose core is not tech, right? Today, every company is a tech company because, you know, tech is everywhere, right? But the thing that you're selling to customers is not tech. What you're selling to customers is essentially, you know, your retail product or your banking services or your insurance services or vehicles, whatever it is, right? So this is the thing that I think they should look at, because now there is a black box in every consumer's life that big tech does not have access to. And that black box is owned, and most part of that black box is owned by social organizations and traditional companies. And this is the opportunity for traditional companies to take the data they have about you and use that to train large language models so they could serve you better and also build an IP moat for their own business. right? So this is something that I think we've been telling, we've been meeting with several board members and various leaders in several boards. We've been talking about this because we want to help, because we are in the business of helping traditional companies and leaders in this space, right? So there is a lot to think about here. So now going back to the budget conversation, the budget, FY24 budgets will probably have two major themes. One theme will be a sub-theme on existing project. How are you going to introduce AI or generative AI on existing projects, right? The other is, how do you actually, the other second section is, some companies, it's not true for every company, some companies that have a lot of access to data, especially banks, insurance companies and all, they will basically think about, wait a minute, we have a lot of customer information, a lot of transactional data, a lot of really powerful data about usage and customer access and their interactions. Can we train large language models? So some of them will end up training what we call private LLMs or private large language models. When I say private, it doesn't mean it has to always run on premise. It could be in the cloud, but it's not that they're using an existing third party like a ChatGPT or whatever. It's their own model. They own the model, right? They're not because typically when you work in the AI space, you have two options, right? You could train your own private models on certain types of data that you own the model, or you could go and work with any number of Silicon Valley startups, which we call point solution, right? As you know, like with generative AI, now if you go to a Starbucks, every startup founder, right, who's worked on any idea, whatever idea, security, blockchain, whatever they worked in the past, ports, analytics, right? You give it a name, right? They are all transitioning themselves to become generative AI. So all these generative AI startup companies are knocking enterprise doors now, right? And saying basically, now we offer generative AI for this, generative AI for that. Basically, generative AI is getting verticalized, right? Which is great. So what happens is, if you're a large company, right? Like large retailer, right? Or if you're a large bank, you're a large, you know, automotive retailer, you're a large insurance company, right? You want to think about look at my current projects. Which projects are core to my IP? Which projects can I build unique intellectual property out of? The data is unique for me, right? In those projects, you should not use point solutions or companies that are providing SaaS. Because when you work with a SaaS company, what they'll end up doing is all your data will go to them. Instead of giving it to OpenAI, you'll end up giving the data to them. But you won't get access to the model, nor will you own the model. They'll give you a solution, right? You can pay $9.99 and get their solution a month, right? But what you really want to do is look across your projects and say, okay, these areas of my project, I'm going to build an IP mod. But these are non-critical or non-core for me. These projects, I'm just going to use a third-party point solution, right? I'll give you a classic example, right? So today, you're a retailer. You want some of your blogs to be rewritten in your tone of voice or something. So there are so many SaaS companies that could write you you click on it, put a little web plugin and it'll regenerate your product description page or whatever, right? Or like simple things, right? Like where you want to record a video and then they will change the background, right? Simple things like that, you can actually use, or like generate some marketing images for you, right? Solutions like that, you could actually easily use a point solution, right? But think about where you are doing customer analysis, or things about where you are actually doing loyalty on customers, or you are doing providing conversational, transactional commerce experiences with customers. Those are areas we are deeply touching base or touching the customer. Or if you're a bank, you are doing loan processing, right? Or straight through processing, right? Those are core to your business. And you don't want to outsource them or use a SaaS type point solution to it. That's where you want to use your own AI models. So that they need to distinguish in terms of where to build versus where to buy. Jeff, any?
Yeah. The software we're using to edit this application or this podcast just now went with a really interesting AI addition. So all my notes will be run through AI. And we'll actually be able to make some super easy links, which will be really awesome for the YouTube videos using AI. That is built in the software. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get at as an analyst to understand where all this shows up, because, you know, when I turn in my tax reports for This Week in Innovation, it's just Descript, the software, but now has a lot of AI and will have more. And I suspect some of the applications you talked about really is AI built into existing applications. But then you also talk about, I'm hearing a lot of IT services. I'm hearing a lot of other components that are very uniquely AI components. So when I'm looking at, if I was back in my old job of building an IT forecast, I'm trying to think of, do I have a new line AI? Certainly AI IT services, without a doubt. And it sounds like maybe that whole large language model might become, I don't know, I guess that might be a unique AI component.
The large language model will become sort of it won't be for every company, right? I think there will be three types of sales that will happen, right? One is existing apps, like the one like you are using here, right? Or like a Zoom or whatever, Microsoft Teams, they are Descript. They all will end up using, right, you know, generative AI. Like you are filing taxes, I'm sure Quicken, one of these guys will eventually start using.
I wish it was Quicken. It's yeah. A good old fashioned CPA. So
yeah. So every app that you have will use generative AI. So that will be transparent to you, and that will mostly be a feature, right?
Right.
Which will most likely not even increase your budget. It'll be the same budget, right?
Right.
Because now these providers are integrating what's already there, and then they're just trying to use generative AI as an edge. So that's method one, right? The second one is basically like, if you want to use generative AI for specific purposes, for like blog writing, right? Or if you are using it for like, let's say like, you know, re-messaging or translation or whatever, or like things that you're trying to use where it's not core, it's important to your business, but it's not very core, where it's not core for building IP. You can actually use a dedicated generative AI startup solution. There's a lot of point solutions that are out there that are doing that, right? Or like for example, you want to create some amazing marketing videos, right? There are a lot of like generative AI marketing video software. You can go in, click a bunch of things, pick the theme. Like you can even put your bumpers, your starting screen, your ending screen. It'll just generate the whole thing, and it'll put your company logo in the background, do all those cool things, right? Edit the volume, right? So all that stuff, you know, they're not core. I mean, they're critical to the company's operation, but they're not a core IP building. So that type of stuff will also be SaaS, but from startups. So they're not existing solutions. They may be just solutions specifically designed for those needs, but might be generative AI point solutions. And then there might be the third option, which is where you need to actually build IP, right? So those are the ones where you need to start, you know, looking at taking your data, preserving it, protecting it, and training models by yourself, and building private LLMs or large vector databases that can basically understand your business. So you can create autonomy and, you know, autonomous capabilities on your existing business, right?
Let's take a $10 billion retailer, fairly aggressive adopter of technology, 5 years ago, probably was spending zero on AI. Let's take that person, that company to 2024. What dollar amount or percentage? Well, I mean, do you have a dollar amount? Do you have a percentage of their IT spend? Typically, IT spend is anywhere from 1.5% of rev to IT. So a $10 billion retailer would have 1.5% of that $10 billion. Of that budget, how big do you think those large language models are and the services wrapped around them to develop all this capability? And I think we're talking about the features and functions in existing software, or even this new software you're talking about. I still think it's just going to end up probably being lumped into marketing software or whatever. But the large language models really does seem like that's a unique new area of spend. What kind of number do you think? I mean, I haven't even begun to think about this. I've seen the numbers that are insane, to me, honestly. So it's just hard for me to wrap my mind around how big those numbers are.
So I think in the AI, right, even before generative AI, right, the 2020 or the 2021 timeframe, early 2020-21 timeframe, right, pre-ChatGPT, even if you look at those markets, well, the IT budget is 1.5% or 2% typically, right? 2 to 4%, depending on how you look at it, right? But then AI has been there in some degree, especially for data analysis and all those things, right? They've been using AI. So it's a very small, out of that 1.5 or 2%, AI has always been very tiny, right? So that's another sub 5% of that 1.5, 2%. But AI has actually been used on the marketing side more extensively, because every retailer, even if you're a $10 billion retailer, you are probably spending 12 to 16, 17% of your budget in marketing, right? That includes ad buying and, you know.
Right. It's a huge number for sure. I don't know about 12%, but I know it's a massive number compared to even the IT spend.
Yeah, and it's a full funnel operation, right? What I mean to say is, depending on, who you are and how your marketing strategy is, there is a lot of, there are 200 components in a traditional marketing funnel, right? So most of the funnels already had, personalization, recommendation. Those were all marketing spends. They were not IT spends, right? Because they had a part of their commerce offerings so all those things rolled in. So if you look at an organization, even post generative AI, has always been probably if you roll everything just pure AI budget for a retailer, probably if you take the full spend, it's probably 0.5% or 1% previously, right? The whole out of the entire retailer spend. But now I think with generative AI, it probably will go higher. It'll probably double, right? And then probably it'll be 1% or 2%, depending on how you are doing it. I mean, retail, I think, will be affected less by it, because in the marketing, what will happen is the marketing folks are always campaign driven. So what they will do is they will go and buy a lot of point solutions for their campaign stuff. And the IT guys might do an investment. Some marketing, some CD, especially in companies where you have CDOs and CTOs type companies, those companies will actually build a little bit more IP, because they would always think about initiatives across their sort of building their own version of a GPT type thing. So those companies will probably spend a little bit more, right? But I think in banks, the spend might be a little even higher, because in banks, the way these operations go is that wherever you can justify straight through processing, that means from the time you deposit till you apply for a loan till the time the loan is delivered, what percentage can you do straight through, fully autonomous, right, without human intervention? Those things can have significant savings, because in the bank, more than the because in retail, it's always been a lot of top line optimizations in terms of revenue increase, right? It doesn't mean we don't do bottom line, but it's essentially been a lot of top line, right? In terms of conversions, commerce, everything. Banks and all those guys, they focus a lot on bottom line optimizations, right? So if you can do straight through processing and cut 20% of the staff in straight through processing, that's a lot of money saving. I mean, it's significant amount of dollars, right? So AI will very quickly begin to influence all those things. And even in retail, you will begin to see this, especially in places like stores. Generative AI will be one of those technologies that will penetrate stores, because a lot of other technologies have always, tried to be in stores. Let's say computer vision, right? You can say how many people are coming, people counting, all those things are there, but their penetration has always been somewhat limited. I think with generative AI, it will penetrate stores in a big way. And not only both stores and commerce, right? But this will be one of those technologies that will be everywhere. You'll wake up in December 2024 and see this has grown faster than you thought it would.
Where is this netting out? Are there new employees being hired in the IT shops to work on AI? Is it still a skunk works? What are you seeing, Brian? I mean, you're sort of in the middle of all this. I mean, is it new staffing? Is it redeyed staffing?
Yeah.
What are the job descriptions for folks working in AI in retail right now?
It's been all over the place, right? Some places where they're hiring, people like prompt engineers, people to interact with existing large language models but issue the right, because you got to talk to these things in a certain way, right? So some places where they've been doing that. There has always been a head of AI or an AI head position that in a lot of companies are hiring, right? And they're also trying to hire generative AI. The other is a lot of the data science team in traditional companies, in retailers and others, because most retailers now have at least the top $1 billion, they all have some kind of data science teams, right? So the data science team and the innovation teams are actually upskilling themselves to become generative AI experts, right? Especially using products like what we are offering, Interplay and others, where you can allow these folks to quickly, learn this type of kits and begin to drag and drop these things. So I think there'll be a little bit of a upskilling of existing staff, a transitioning that happens, right? That's what will happen. But I think there might also be a little bit of core IT challenges that might happen too. Because today, if you look at like the IT staff, especially on the in-store maintenance, so today most of the like in the back office of all the retail stores, right? They all have CPUs, right? Typically computers, right? Like traditional computers running in there. But with generative AI, now all those IT people have to begin to maintain GPUs because the large language models won't really run on CPUs, right? We are working on large language models that can run on CPU, especially with CPU providers. So we are committed to that industry. But what's interesting is that's going to be an interesting shift on IT. So there'll be a lot more businesses in the future, IT folks, if on retail, asking vendors for edge computing as well as CPU-powered computing capabilities because they are not still comfortable with GPUs. And building and maintaining and managing GPU systems is not very easy, especially on-premise. Cloud is different because cloud is a little bit transparent to you because the cloud providers have made it easy, right? But cost-wise, even in the cloud, it's orders of magnitude high. Right. It's not as simple. Like we did some like CPU versus GPU calculations. Right. It's like 4x higher, 4 times higher. Like wow. 4x is a 400% increase. Right. So that's very, you got to be super careful. That's why I think a lot of retailers, a lot of these companies are going to start thinking about, you know, what the eventual cost of generative AI is going to be. But at the same time, that's not going to deter. Right. That's the evolution in the step. Right. Because when we invent great technology, with great technology comes great, great pain and great responsibility. So this
well,
is a great.
And at some point, cost kicks in too, which I'm starting to hear little rumblings about. It's certainly not my area of expertise. But who are the big winners in AI from a tech perspective? I probably have about 7 names I can think of, but I'm just curious, who do you think are going to be the big winners initially?
From the tech side, I think you have to break it into who they are. So one is the chip. At the very bottom is chip players, which is basically NVIDIA, Intel, Qualcomm, AMD, right? The chip players, right? And then there are all the other smaller chip players too, but these are kind of the main chip players, right? Then on top of the chip, there is the infrastructure players, AWS, Microsoft, Google, GCP, Google, right? And then the other ones, HPE, Oracle, right? The infrastructure players, right? Then you have basically the LLM makers or these LLM providers, right? Like, for example, OpenAI, Anthropic, right? Companies like that who are building these off-table diffusion, stable AI, stability AI, all these guys who are providing the software, the LLM software, right? Then on top of that, you have these application companies, application building like application software companies that are allowing you to build generative AI, right? Like Interplay, like Iterate AI, or like, you know, like kits like LangChain, right? Any of these guys who are actually allowing you to build AI application. There are a number of startups that are
And those are the low code players that are using low code to be able to play.
Yeah.
Okay. Low differentiating code, from the big package software.
Yeah, package software, because they're loving low code to play, right? And on top of that, at the very tip of it is all the point solutions. Point solutions mean SaaS, pure SaaS. So the SaaS is actually what their SaaS providers are playing, vertical SaaS and, you know, all that stuff. So now the question is, who will be the winners? So at the very bottom, right, on the chipset stack, or the very, very bottom of the base, I think NVIDIA, as you know, is already emerged as the winner, right? Which is kind of, you know, we all know, right? And that's going to grow and grow and grow. GPU needs going to grow, right? But there might be another winner. We're at the very, very bottom of the stack of the core chipset, right? I think as we know, NVIDIA is already emerged as a winner in terms of GPUs, right? Because they are the leading GPU providers. So I think they are going to continue that path. Because what happens is in this generative AI in general, it's an 80-20 game, right? What I mean by that is 20% of all AI operations will involve GPU. That means whenever you train, you need a GPU. It's hard to train on a CPU, right? But then when you are running these models, several companies, and including us and others, are doing investigations on how to effectively run a lot of these models on CPU. So I think in this journey, both Qualcomm and Intel might emerge as winners, because Qualcomm will emerge as a winner specifically in the edge category, where you are deploying it on the very edge in the store where like traditional computers are not used, right? It's like specialized boards and things like that, right? Because that case is across everywhere. It's in retail stores or like, you know, in a retail point of sale, you have that case in a QSR, you have this case in military, right? So this case is everywhere. So they will actually get a lot of traction specifically for inference, or like that means these models running, doing predictions with the models. Intel, I think, will also emerge as a winner, I think, in their specifically wherever traditional CPU is used. Because most IT companies, right, and most retailers, right, they use traditional, you know, like they use traditional computers, right? Like they work with an HP or a Dell as a provider, and they provide computers with traditional CPUs, right? So there will be a plethora of more powerful CPUs that will get deployed. And I think that'll be a good opportunity for players like Intel and others to play there. And I think so in that stack, I think those three will do really well, right? NVIDIA, Intel, and Qualcomm, right? The one level of the upper stack, if you go one level higher, now you have the infrastructure players, right? Infrastructure players are going to benefit the most, right? It's going to be like that saying, right? What is that? It's a win or lose, we boost kind of concept. Well, I don't know what they say here, but that's kind of very, you know, like especially when you are going into sports games and all, you know, supporting a team, you know, you don't care which team wins, you know, eventually you party.
Well, you're talking about the casinos. They don't care. They don't care who wins or loses, because they're taking a cut off both sides. So
I think the infrastructure players are gonna
and by benefit. Infrastructure you mean basically AWS, Google Cloud, and
Microsoft.
Of course, yeah. Boy, get Microsoft as well.
Right, and they're gonna win, and Oracle also could be, because I think Oracle's catching up as well specifically in generative AI, right? So all these four guys can probably do very well. Whatever happens, they're gonna be a part of the game, right? And then on top of it, application builders who are providing tool sets like, you know, Interplay and all those things. The verticalized tool sets for application building in certain verticals, I think, you know, players like us and a few others will win, because end of the day, large companies want to build and customize IP for themselves. Not everybody wants to just switch to a SaaS, right? So I think that market, I think that's a more stable business built there. Specifically with larger companies that are whose market caps or revenues are greater than $1 billion, right? Mm-hmm. They will all go towards building and securing their data, and they are going to be very careful about how they use AI, and also like security, compliance, all those things will kick in, right? The other is for big, large traditional companies. AI does not operate without any data, so integration into legacy is a big part of it, right? So that stack, I think, players like us will win. Then on top of that, now you have the SaaS tech, right? The SaaS tech, you are going to have a lot of companies, lots and lots of companies, right? That's one of the things.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. What do you mean by? Are you talking about the application providers?
Yeah, I'm talking about SaaS providers.
Okay,
right?
So that's everyone.
I'm talking about, you know, like I'm not talking about the traditional sales forces of all, because for them, generative AI is a part of an existing offering, right? I'm not talking about SAP. I'm not talking about SAP, right? I'm not talking about those players. I'm talking about like the companies that come out of Y Combinator, the ones that get funded by Andreessen Horowitz.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, right? the startup community at this point, new functionality.
I don't want to just completely blanketly say a startup community, because there is a group of startup companies that are actually working very carefully on what the infrastructure is going to be. But the ones that simply say, okay, now you have a generative AI-based block software, or you're going to have a generative AI-based, you know, legal software, generative AI-based document analysis software, whatever, right? The ones who pick a vertical and do a SaaS, right? Generative AI-based dating matching profile software, right? Whatever the thing is, right? And then things like those companies, there's going to be like a million of them. And then very soon, all the VCs are going to ask, like, you know, where's my money, right? Where's my contract, right? And then all these guys are going to start knocking on doors. on sales, right? And eventually there's been mega consolidation. So you're going to see like now you're seeing amazing funding in generative AI in the SaaS space. You're probably like next August, September, you're going to, some of them will emerge as winners and unicorns, and most of them are going to die. The same thing that played out in every other industry will play in SaaS, I think, right?
Yeah, so I mean the failure rate is in the AI community is going to be the same as it has traditionally been. I don't know if there's an official number, but it seems like it's 9 out of 10 startups go, you know, either absorbed or...
Yeah. So those are things I think. There might also be a lot of early acquisitions too, especially there'll be a lot of simple acqui-hires, whatever type stuff that'll happen. I think the thing is now they're all in the overvalued funding cycle. But then I think what will happen is reality will probably hit next October, next Q3, Q4, post-summer. You'll begin to see.
I'm assuming the IT services guys are going to do quite well in this whole space. Also.
I did not cover them. I think they will do very well.
I would assume every one of them is going to have a practice. I mean, it sounds like it's probably.
For them, it's what I call a sandwich. Right. What I mean by the sandwich is at the very top of digital, because if you look at the way the IT services companies, they sell their offering, right? Most of them, even if you are a tech IT service, most of the companies have a strategy consulting arm to it, right? So it's like the strategy consulting is going to be started doing these board presentations, capturing the executive excitement from the very top, right? And then on the other side, their delivery teams are going to deliver, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure they will also have failures, lots of failures too, because the skill set in generative AI is much more complicated than it's. I'm sure you know it's not. I mean, you can do generative AI apps by reading Medium and learning all those things, but getting LLMs up and running and like productionalizing them is not very easy, right? So it's like, but eventually they'll learn. I mean, because these companies have deployed high scale stuff, so they'll eventually catch up.
Yeah.
But I think they will do well because they got the sandwich, because they got the very very front and they got the very back. So I think they will do well. But they need to upskill really quickly. And they also might use a partnership strategy where they'll work with other type of software companies like us and others, where they, the skill set they can quickly procure very quickly, begin to go to market very quickly, right?
Okay.
So that's kind of where those will be. But there's one other segment I forgot, is the ones who make large language models, right? Let's take companies like Anthropic, companies like OpenAI, right? All these research labs that are building their own large language models, right? As stability AI, right?
How many are in that? Cause that's a slide I think you showed me once. I mean, there's how many? I mean,
a lot of companies.
Like
there's
30
of
or 40
companies.
In there in that space, yeah, right? Yeah, there's a huge number.
Yeah, there is at least about 30 plus companies in that space.
Yeah, okay.
But the ones that have sort of broken the glass ceiling and kind of got into some level of traction and built models that are useful, probably around 8 to 10, right? But the thing for them is, today we are all beneficiaries of all the hard work, they did. So I also want to be very respectful to them because, if they haven't done what they did and, built all these things.
It's fine.
Yeah. So I think they've done a great job. But one thing I want to point out, though, is training a large language model is super, super expensive, right? So typically these companies have raised hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And also have burnt $20, $30, $40, $50 million training these models, right? And to some degree, like they are in an arms race, which requires a lot of GPUs. It requires a lot of algorithmic inventions, right? Because it's great that GPUs, are becoming faster and more capable and powerful and power up efficient and everything. But without the right algorithmic inventions, you are not going to make breakthroughs. So those algorithmic inventions have to happen. So they have a lot of investments, but then they have to monetize them, right? I think companies like ChatGPT or others are still yet to prove the level of monetization, right? I mean, they're building great models, but the question is, can they monetize that valuations and other things that they're going after, right? And it's yet to be proven. I mean, it can, but I think it's a little bit, there's a lot to be played out in that industry. Right.
Okay.
Because it's a very capital intensive, very intensive industry, because everybody else will sort of take a quick free ride. right?
So Brian,
because and also thanks to open source, I think open source is going to be the biggest winner.
Okay, so Brian, man, you know, obviously a lot of conversation around AI right up to the White House and their AI task force, which I just saw some notifications on. I haven't really dug into that yet. I'm not sure they're ready to really present to the public, but you know, obviously you're at the UN, so White House, UN, every consultancy on the planet's talking about AI. What should our listeners, what should retailers be doing? Let's say it's Saturday, you know, we're recording this Saturday night, on Monday morning. What's their strategy?
See, I think if you're a senior retail leader, and I would say the same thing as what I said previously, is that first is look at your organization and look at use cases. Where can you actually apply it? So that would be the first one, right? Second is, out of these use cases, where can I build IP or an IP moat? So separate those use cases where you can build an IP moat and make large investments in those places where you can build an IP moat, right? Where you can train your own large language models, or like, not, you don't need to build your model from scratch, but you can fine tune and build models with your data. So that, figure out where is the IP, where do I use to point, where do I need to use point solution, right? Make that determination, right? Third, I think what you should look at is that how do we deploy and scale some of these things, and how do we actually position this to our user community? Because there's a lot of stuff happening in AI. So the internal messaging within your organization, as well as external messaging to your users and to your employees, have to be thought through really well. So focus a little bit, work with your teams to focus on what the messaging, positioning on this. So those are the kind of the three things I would look at, right? And maybe the fourth thing, I think, along with the messaging, is to do enough experiments very quickly and try to get some initial wins and some KPIs. Because in the retail world, and even the banking world, I think KPIs are everything. You want to be able to show some level of numbers. Because I think, unlike other technology trends that have passed through, AI is here to stay. It's not passing through. And you know, if you don't get involved with it, you know, you're going to be behind, and significantly behind, right? So that's what I would think about it.
All right. Sounds good. Lots more around AI, I think, going forward, certainly as we begin to build into NRF and beyond. So look forward to ongoing conversations. Welcome back home, Brian. our little hometown here it missed you being on the road so much. So I'm looking forward to really getting back into a rhythm and unpacking what's happening in the startup community and the innovation space in the retail industry.
Thank you, Jeff. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for giving today's pod a listen, and now a view. For more info, check out the show notes, and please give us a 5-star rating. Like and subscribe, as the kids say. It really helps us grow. If you'd like to be a guest, send me a note. We're always looking for innovative thought leaders and startups really doing interesting things. And make sure to come back for next week's episode.